From WGCU News, this is Gulf Coast Live. I'm Julie Glenn. The student government of Florida Gulf Coast University passed a resolution calling on university administrators to adopt a sanctuary campus policy. It's a move students are making happen on campuses across Florida and the country after pledges by the Trump administration to end DACA, the Deferred Action for Childhood Arrivals program. It's an Obama-era program that provides some protections against deportation for undocumented immigrants who arrived in the U.S. at a young age. Today, we'll talk with the outgoing FGCU student president, as well as students and teachers at FGCU working with the school's roughly 60 DACA students. Plus, losing the ability to see can have devastating impacts on people, and a local nonprofit group called Lighthouse seeks to help those who have lost their vision to adjust. We'll talk with two people who lost their ability to see about the extreme adjustments they've been forced to make, and we'll talk with organizers of this year's Dining in the Dark fundraiser about how a blindfolded meal gives people a brief sense of what it's like for the blind. First, the news. This is Gulf Coast Live. I'm Julie Glenn. Whether it happens suddenly or gradually, the loss of sight can be a devastating thing, but a local group is working to help people adjust and thrive. We'll talk with people from the Lighthouse of Southwest Florida and two of its clients about the impacts of blindness and the learning curve people face when vision is lost. But first, should Florida Gulf Coast University be a sanctuary campus? That's what the FGCU student government is seeking after agreeing on a resolution that calls on campus administrators to look for that designation. It's the campus equivalent of a sanctuary city, and it's in response to pledges from the Trump campaign to crack down on undocumented immigrants in the DACA program. DACA stands for Deferred Action for Childhood Arrivals Program, and it was started by President Obama by executive order in 2012. It provides some protections against deportation for undocumented immigrants who arrived in the U.S. at a young age. FGCU administrators estimate that the school has between 60 and 70 DACA students, although they're not officially listed as such on admissions papers, nor are they tracked or categorized in their student documentation. The sanctuary campus discussion has sparked a wider discussion among students, faculty, and administrators on campus. And here to talk about the student government's proposal is outgoing student body president Theodens Elnias, who goes by T. Welcome to Gulf Coast Live.
Thank you.
Also joining the show today is Brian Oliva Infante with the FGCU Dream Team organization. Welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me.
Working with that student group, we have Dr. Nicola Foote, who is the chair of FGCU's Department of Social Sciences. Welcome.
Thank you.
And to give us perspective on DACA and sanctuary provisions and executive orders and more, we have FGCU Professor Peter Bergerson. Welcome back to the show.
Oh, great to be here.
We are talking about sanctuary campuses and what it would mean for such a designation to happen at FGCU. Call in with your questions or comments on the proposal by sharing your thoughts at 877-428-8255. That's 877-GCU-TALK. On Facebook, we're at WGCU Public Media. On Twitter, we're at WGCU using the hashtag GCL. You can visit WGCUnews.org for more ways to get in touch. T, I want to start with you as the student government president. Tell me how this proposal to make FGCU into a sanctuary campus first came about. How did it come up?
Well, it came from student input. A variety of different student groups have been talking about it. This has been something that you notice is going on the national scale. So students wanted to see something like this processed here on campus and for us to explore that option. So a few weeks ago, towards the end of February, the Student Senate was doing a mutual respect, acknowledging mutual respect on campus, highlighting some of our campus values, and they suggested that adding it and exploring the sanctuary campus component to be a part of that resolution. So that's how it came about, based off of the input that students have been giving members of the Student Senate.
So this came from students' concerns coming to the Student Senate getting together and then deciding that this is something that the student body in general is for.
Yes.
Okay. And so when did this pass with you guys? You said a couple weeks ago?
Yeah, it was a few weeks ago.
So then you forward this to school administration? So, is that how that works?
So the way it works is this is the resolution serves as a statement for that the students want to have these conversations, and now through the student leaders, we'll start those conversations with the university administration.
Okay. So the, and then so what's next is then a conversation then with the administration?
Yes.
And then trying to urge them to move forward?
Trying to urge them to explore the option and see what that means for FGCU, because being a sanctuary campus isn't I wouldn't say it's something that everybody understands per se. So we want to have that conversation and see what it entails for us and how do we go about becoming that and having that classification.
What kind of implications it'll have on all levels.
Yeah.
I understand. So Brian Oliva Infante with the FGCU Dream Team organization. Tell me about this group. I'm guessing that the term comes from Barack Obama called DACA students dreamers, and that's maybe where you got the name?
Yes, yes.
So exactly. This is a group of DACA students.
Yes, the majority of us are DACA students. I myself am not a DACA student. I am a U.S. citizen, but I speak on their behalf to ensure their safety and protect their identity.
So they felt unsafe coming to talk on the radio about being a DACA kid?
To a certain extent, many DACA students are not very open about their status simply because there's a lot of turmoil in the political climate at the time. So they just felt it was safer to send a U.S. citizen, myself, to speak on their behalf and to represent the organization as a whole.
So what is it that they fear?
They fear the program being terminated. They fear mass deportation. They just fear losing all the progress that they've worked for in this country.
They fear having their name out there and being identified?
Yes.
And then being, like, if it is overturned, then they don't want to have their name on somebody's short list of, oh, check this
yes,
out.
Yes, definitely. It's to protect their identity and to make sure they are not targeted by the public.
Well, Lindsay Ray is an immigration attorney with the Amigos Center here in Southwest Florida, and she deals with hundreds of DACA students. It's required that they renew their paperwork with the government every 2 years. I had a chance to talk with Lindsay earlier today, and she says that the students that she encounters don't seem quite as worried about a change in policy as their parents are. Let's have a listen.
There's fear amongst the parents of DACA students because they really understand what it's like to live as undocumented adults. So there are some people who choose not to renew their DACA, thinking that that will keep them more under the radar. But for the most part, everybody is continuing to stay in the program and renew.
So some people are actually choosing to just not renew because they want to stay under the radar?
Once in a while. It's not very common, but yes, that happens. And sometimes what happened for some families, too, is even though their DACA was expiring at some point after the election or in the new year, they wanted to see what the new administration would do. So now they're coming forward and saying, okay, I feel a little bit more comfortable. I'd like to renew, but my DACA has already expired, which they can still renew. But yeah, there's a little more caution with these cases.
If somebody does have their DACA lapse, is it possible for them to go back and get it?
Oh, yeah. DACA can be renewed up to a year after it expires.
We are talking about sanctuary campuses and what it would mean for such a designation to happen at FGCU. Call in with your questions or comments on the proposal at 877-428-8255. That's 877-GCU-TALK. On Facebook, we're at WGCU Public Media, and on Twitter, we are at WGCU, using the hashtag GCL. So Dr. Nicola Foote with FGCU, tell us about how you work with this student organization called the Dream Team, and what reaction, if any, any FGCU administrators have shared with you in regards to this sanctuary campus proposal?
Well, I'm the faculty advisor for the Dream Team Club, and all RSOs, registered student organizations, are required to have a faculty mentor. So that's the role that I play with this organization. And I've been involved in working with DACA students at FGCU for several years now. For example, in 2014, we worked to pass a bill through Faculty and Student Senate to promote tuition equality for DACA students. Prior to that point, they had to pay out-of-state tuition, and we were able to work for a change that also happened at the state level in getting them recognized as in-state so that they could pay that in-state tuition. So this is work that I've been doing for a while because I believe that it's essential that all FGCU students have an equal access to education here at FGCU.
Have you heard any pushback or anything from any school administrators about becoming a sanctuary campus?
I wouldn't say pushback, but I think that there are concerns among faculty as well about using that specific terminology. And I think some of the reason for that is that the definition of what that entails isn't 100% clear. So I think among faculty, my perspective is that there's very, very widespread support for supporting DACA students and all of our students, regardless of immigration status. And the Faculty Senate recently passed a bill last month that made a resolution in support of all faculty, students, staff, and administrators, regardless of their national origin, regardless of their immigration status. So, so there's definitely support for being inclusive, recognizing the challenges of DACA students, but I think there's some hesitation about the specific language of Sanctuary Campus.
Yeah, the terminology of Sanctuary City, Sanctuary Campus, it is pretty loaded. It's very politically loaded, which makes me turn to Dr. Peter Bergerson. Tell me a little bit about the idea of sanctuary anything.
Well, the idea at least of sanctuary cities and sanctuary campuses was really an urban phenomenon, and it started out in the West Coast, particularly, but it has spread to around the country. There's at least 80 schools, if not more, who are right now debating and discussing the idea or the classification of a sanctuary campus. But basically, it means that the university, in some numerous different means, is going to shield these DACA students from interference from the federal government and rounding them up, as Trump said, bad hombres. And you know, there has been obviously some fear tactics that have been used during the campaign about illegal immigrants and again, rounding them up. So the idea of a sanctuary city or a sanctuary campus is to refuse or be involuntarily involved in sharing university information with the Immigration and Customs Enforcement Service. That's one. Others, as Nicole has suggested, the idea of having in-state tuition for these students, not to discriminate against admissions. I think it's important to point out that there is no universal model of what is a sanctuary city or what is a sanctuary campus. And many of these schools are now debating what this might mean and what the consequences might be for the universities as well.
The consequences are what concerned one person that we talked with today. I spoke with FGCU College Republican Recruitment Chair Alex Kazmir today, and here's what he had to say about his group's thoughts on the sanctuary campus designation.
Through the College Republicans, we welcome everybody. We want the more immigrants that come to this country legally, the better this country will be. So we want these people to stay. We don't want these students to have to worry about their safety. But the sanctuary campus is not the way to go about it. The sanctuary campus essentially does is saying, we don't agree with this federal law, so we're not going to follow it. So student government is now picking and choosing what federal laws they're going to follow. As the College Republicans, we're sitting there, we're like, hold on, how far of a stone's throw is it to say, you know, we don't like this law. We're going to make a sanctuary campus where only this can happen. Or we're going to say, only this can happen on campus. So the school does not have the legal authority to do that. It's putting into jeopardy the other thousands of students who are here legally, pay tuition, and they rely on federal financial aid to help them come to school. So to put in jeopardy the other 90 to 95% of the students, their education for less than 1% of the population, and that those are our biggest problems with it.
So his concern then is federal funding going away from a college if they were to enact something like that. Is there a risk of something like that, Peter?
It's possible, but that's a long way down the line. First of all, there has to be a designation determined as such, which, of course, has not happened here. It has happened at schools like Wellesley and also Rutgers out on the East Coast.
Did they face did they lose federal funding as a result of becoming?
No, not yet.
Okay.
In other words, Trump, first of all, President Trump has not reversed President Obama's order.
Yes.
So we're in the jumping ahead, way ahead of ourselves here. And also, it's not necessarily any sanctuary city has not said that they would not follow federal orders. It's It's the volunteering or being active participants in turning over information to the Immigration and Customs Service. So it's not rejecting or ignoring federal law, or if President Trump would change the status, it's just asking that the university not be complicit with them. In other words, I think some of the DACA students are worried that if they're identified as DACA students, then in turn their names are going to be turned over and they're going to be expedited. In other words, they're going to be listed already. But I'll let others speak to that.
And at the very base, sanctuary means that the federal government would not be able to compel local authorities, in this case campus police, to report an undocumented immigrant to immigration officials. However, it doesn't bar them from doing so.
That's correct.
So that's basic. We do have a caller on the line, Alex from Fort Myers, who's been very patiently waiting. Alex, what is your question?
For the student government officials, how many students have voiced their concerns? Have they done petitions? And if so, how many people have signed up for it?
Okay. So that would be a question probably for T. How many students have voiced their concerns or have signed on or have expressed their worry about or their desire to make this a sanctuary campus?
From my knowledge, I believe there's a petition going on now that it has over 200 signatures from various student groups on campus. The big thing is students want to have this conversation. So students want to get the conversation going and to really explore this and see what it means for our campus and what that would be like, what it is actually going to be like for us as a university.
And so you had a meeting a couple weeks ago, you said, with Student Senate, and that also talked with a lot of different student group organizations. Mm-hmm. And of those student group organizations that were at that, I don't want to call it a summit, but, you know, like a gathering of people that's talking with Student Senate, what was it? Would you say majority of those groups held the same kind of concern or wanting to move forward with something like this?
Yeah, I would say majority of those groups, the groups that were represented, want to have these conversations and want students to really ensure that the DACA students and the waiver students are being talked about and not marginalized in any way on this campus.
And not being forgotten.
Yeah.
Do you have a question or comment about FGCU becoming a sanctuary campus? Give us a call at 877-428-8255. That's 877-GCU-TALK. On Facebook, we're at WGCU Public Media, and on Twitter, we are at WGCU using the hashtag of GCO. So, Dr. Foote, who are these kids that are in the U.S. under DACA? You said you've been working with them for years. How young did they have to be when they came to the U.S. to qualify for this designation?
They had to be under 16 at the time that they came.
So before DACA, were they just considered illegal immigrants?
Absolutely. And so a lot of the students that I've worked with have been here since they were very, very young children, babies or toddlers in many cases. And if you didn't know about their status, there's absolutely no way to distinguish them from American students. They absolutely identify as American. They, are very culturally assimilated. And I think that's part of the issue here is that for them, the recognition that's been given to them underlines that fact that they are people who've grown up in our society, who went through our local high schools. And many of them are our top achieving students. There are some really outstanding students who have won prizes for their research, who are just doing outstanding things on campus and in our local society as a whole.
But before 2012, they didn't have a Social Security number. They were considered undocumented and that was it.
Absolutely. And so they couldn't work. They couldn't get driver's licenses. So DACA was really transformative for opening up a pathway for them to be able to participate in society as adults, that these individuals who came as children, they didn't get to participate in a decision about, they didn't understand what immigration laws were at play as they came to the United States. And they've grown up in our society. They've gone through our high schools. They're contributing. And so DACA provides a mechanism for them to get a driver's license, Social Security number. And it simply defers any immigration hearing. It doesn't, at present, create a pathway to citizenship.
Yeah, and that's the other thing. I wanted to ask Peter Bergerson, what's the difference between DACA and having resident status? I mean, it sounds like it says DACA is just kind of like we're just going to wait until we figure out what to do with you.
That's part of it, yes. In many cases, the parents are illegal. And that puts them in a category that is kind of limbo or unknown. They have to be under 21 when they came here. Before under 15 when they came, and they have to be in school or have a high school diploma. They have to have no criminal record. So far, there's at least 700,000. This is the number that has been given out by the Immigration Services. And so
– is that nationwide?
Yes, nationwide, obviously not here in Southwest Florida. What President Obama did was through executive order, which can be changed by President Trump, is that his interpretation of the immigration rules has put them in kind of a deferred status and a deferred prosecution status so that prosecutors and ICE Immigration and Custom Enforcement won't go out after them. And so they put them in a particular category until these can be resolved or some legislation can be dealt with to address this particular classification.
What's interesting to me is the psychology of this, because these are kids that were young. And when I was talking to Lindsay Ray from the Amigos Center, she said they've been going to school here and saying Pledge Allegiance to our flag since they were, you know, very young. And then so they don't really feel like they're not from here. So it's kind of psychologically difficult for them to grasp feeling afraid of something like this, because it doesn't seem like it's part of reality. And that might be something I'd like to throw over to Brian. I mean, is that kind of the mindset with some of your friends that are in this Dreamer group?
Yes, I would consider them as American as I am. I was born and raised in the U.S., and they are as American as we are. They grew up waving red, white, and blue. They said they pledge allegiance to our flag. They consider themselves American.
Does it seem surreal that it's possible that that could be taken away from them?
Yes. I mean,
it kind of seems like an abstract, maybe.
Yeah, to a certain extent, I'd say. I know President Trump once called this program an unconstitutional executive amnesty. So that idea is still in his administration, I'd say. And terminating a program like this, they'd be sending them to their country of origin would be like sending them to a foreign country, because they consider this country their country as well.
Yeah. We have a caller on the line from Venice. Ken is calling in from Venice. Ken, what would you like to say?
Oh, my comment to everyone was, what do the taxpayers who are putting a big bill for the university, they should have something to say in this, whether it's going to be protected campus or not. I don't think, say, 1% of the students should have to say. That's my comment, and I wonder what everybody thought.
I'm not sure I fully understand your comment. You think that taxpayers whose money funds state public universities?
Taxpayers funding a good part of the university, myself included, that why should 1% of the students decide what kind of campus it's going to be?
Well, I'd be happy to address that issue, or at least put my insight into it. Keep in mind, first of all, the university has not been designated as a sanctuary campus. And if it would be, it would have to have the approval of the legal counsel, and in turn, there would have to be input and a decision by the Board of Trustees. And so we're jumping way ahead here, and again, I think adding to this emotional fear of something that is in the process of open discussion and is part of the university process, that not only happening here, but at least 80, if not 100 campuses are also discussing.
Peter, you said that there are a couple of other campuses that have gone through with becoming a sanctuary campus?
Yeah, perhaps the one that has been the most active, and this is at least has been Rutgers out in New Jersey, the East Coast area, and they have been very, very proactive in advocating that Rutgers be a sanctuary campus, and they have had presented a whole list of issues to the administration there at Rutgers, including the protection of undocumented aliens or immigrants, asking for administrative counseling for those whose legal status is unknown. To have faculty training and support for them, asking them to refuse voluntary information sharing with immigration officials, and even to the point of restricting immigration and custom officials on campus. So they have been one that is very active in not only the faculty, but the American Federation of Teachers has been involved. Wellesley, perhaps, is one of the first that was involved in this, and they had much more of a unified campus effort there with the faculty, and the administration seemed to be in unison and actively working towards that status of a sanctuary campus.
Another thing that came out with my conversation with Lindsay Ray earlier, and she couldn't join us for the show. She had a previous engagement with the Amigos Center. She's an immigration attorney. She mentioned that DACA kids are not able to leave the United States or they would lose their ability to stay here. And I wanted to ask Brian Oliva Infante with the Dream Team, do any of your friends ever talk about not being able to go out of the country?
Yes. They have many family members in their country of origin. And because of the way things are, the way the laws are set, they have been separated from their family members, and they dream of going, of being able to visit their family members, being able to visit their country of origin, and coming back to the U.S. But unfortunately, they are not allowed to, and that's why they've been separated for so long.
Yeah. So once they leave the country, leave the United States, they cannot continue with DACA.
Yes. It's not a promised return to the U.S.
Yeah. Can you explain what some of these students are facing with the threats to DACA and the nationwide changes in the mood and stuff? I mean, you know these people and you talk to them every day. Does this come up every day in their conversations?
Yes. Yes, definitely. Because of the climate and because of the things going on, there are still mass deportations going on locally in Clark County. And it's definitely something that we talk about every single day because it's just the world we live in right now. It's the lifestyle of sometimes having to hide, of who they are, having to worry about their parents or their family members being deported. They go to school not knowing if they'll find their parents when they come home. So it's definitely something that they live with every day, and it's a struggle, and I hear it in their voices.
And I want to ask also about the future that they're envisioning, because once you're no longer a student and you've graduated college, then what happens?
Well, hopefully you'd go into the workforce, but...
But you still wouldn't be able to go and travel family outside of the country.
No, no, unless they were to receive some type of change in their citizenship or something. That's the only way they would be able to travel back to their country.
So, T, as student body president, have you heard from any DACA students that are friends of yours or friends of DACA students about this kind of anxiety?
Well, I haven't heard from DACA students directly, no.
But representatives of them and friends and classmates?
Yeah.
And Dr. Foote, you work with these students all the time. Do you feel this kind of anxiety with them? It's really just a tenor. Nothing's actually happened. That's what the deal is, and that's what Dr. Bergerson keeps pointing out. We haven't become a sanctuary campus, and DACA has not been overturned yet, but it's just living day to day, as Brian was mentioning, with the fear that something could happen. Do you hear that too, Dr. Foote?
Absolutely. There is a climate of uncertainty, I think, for many categories of immigrants at present, but the DACA students in particular. And I would like to underline that they already face many additional challenges that other groups of students don't. For example, they're not eligible for any federal aid. So they can't get Pell Grants. Many, as I mentioned, many of these students are exceptionally capable and gifted students who, based on their high school graduation, based on their SAT scores and things like that, would have been eligible for merit scholarships, but they can't get them because of their status. So they already face challenges. They're limited in some of the opportunities they can take advantage of. For example, they can't do study abroads that are an increasingly important way in which students expand their learning, and it's a recognized high-impact practice. They can't participate, but then they have this additional layer of emotional anxiety. And I think that's where the student government bill is coming from. As I said, I have some hesitance about the specific language, but I commend the effort to underline that we are committed to supporting all of our students because they are facing this anxiety and uncertainty.
Well, one of the things I think that has led to the anxiety perhaps is that with President Obama's deportation policies and practices, he focused on those that were criminals and those that were deported more than any previous president, including President Eisenhower, who had Operation Wetback that was heavily involved in deportation. But the change has been in the tone and the aggressive nature that President Trump has taken on in the 50 days or so that he's been president. I think that has what's led to the anxiety and the unknown. Are the DACA students, are they going to be targeted as in the same category as hardened criminals are? And that, I think, is that has led to what Nicole has talked about and our students here with the anxiety.
It's interesting the language. The Operation Wetback was used, and it just the words that are used. But then what's amazing to me is that the word sanctuary, which is a pretty peaceful word, is a real flashpoint word for a lot of people because that word has become very politicized and, as you pointed out, due to the fear factor.
Yeah.
So this was, and another part that might be contributing to the fear factor is the executive order part of this. This was an executive order to begin with. So I think that makes it a little easier to undo. Am I right, Dr. Peterson?
Oh, very easily. Yeah, sure. And, you know, President Trump is, as all presidents have had a number of executive orders reversing past executive orders of President Obama, or President Obama reversed executive orders of President Bush. He has not reversed this order yet, and at least that I'm not aware of, he's had rather sharp, blunt language about illegal immigrants, but he has not specifically addressed the DACA order. And I'm sure that people closer to it than I am are really watching and attuned to this, but no, he has not.
He has not. Do you think it's likely that he will?
Hard to say.
It's hard to tell, yes.
Yeah, really it is. It's hard to say. I don't know. I would not want to speak for him.
Yeah, it would be kind of hard to try to predict anybody. So just to be clear, we're at the point right now where the Student Senate has asked the administration to look into the idea of becoming a sanctuary campus and to follow through. What does it take for FGCU to adopt or not adopt this type of designation, Dr. Bergerson?
Well, I'm not sure. My guess is that there would maybe others would have a closer, but have to be engaged at the university attorney, have to be engaged with the president, provost, others. Maybe Nicole knows better than me.
Yeah, I think it would be a very complex process that would involve the very senior levels of administration, the board of trustees, and so on. And as T has been emphasizing, I think what the students are trying to do is start a conversation about how do we stand, ensure that all of our students maintain equal access to their education here at FGCU. And so I welcome the fact that we've started that and we can explore what options are available.
So right now, it's the beginning of the conversation.
Absolutely.
Yeah. All right. And that's where we're going to leave our conversation because we've run out of time. I want to thank you for joining us today. T. Elnias, outgoing FGCU student body president, Brian Oliva Infante with the FGCU Dream Team. Thanks for being here. Also, Dr. Nicola Foote, FGCU professor and chair of FGCU's Department of Social Sciences, and Peter Bergerson, FGCU professor of political science. I also want to thank Lindsay Ray, immigration attorney with the Amigos Center and FGCU College Republican Recruitment Chair Alex Kazmir for joining us. We heard parts of interviews with them today on our show as well. We'll be right back.